Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 17th. I'm Ray Graff. While Gordon Fricke has his hazard lights on, his emergency brake is engaged here in Studio A. He'll be parked for the next hour or so to answer all of your questions about automotive maintenance and repair. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls now at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show when Gordon is here, so I advise you earnestly to call in early. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke, your car calls, coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body towing, and used car facility in lovely Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, beginning at Factory Mechanics Training School in Germany. And always great to have him on the program. If you have a question, good to get in early. By the end of the show, you probably won't get in. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back, sir.
Thanks, Ray. Nice to be here.
You drove a pretty cool car in today.
Well, you know, it's a car that it's the one and only car that I ever purchased new.
Really?
1987.
You still have it?
Yeah, I still have it.
It pays to know a mechanic.
It hasn't really given me much trouble. It's a good car.
It's a Volkswagen.
It's a 16-valve Scirocco.
Nice car.
Very limited. Only made it a few years. You never see them around anymore.
Now, before we get to the calls, this is a good seg. What, in fact, do the extra valves, the four valves, it's four valves per cylinder,
yes,
right?
Yes, yep.
And so what do they do?
Well, what it does is it takes an overhead cam engine and lets it breathe much more freely. You have two valves on the intake, two valves on the exhaust. It's a cross flow head. So the air goes in one end and the exhaust goes out the other.
Right.
So it's to make the engine breathe more efficiently.
Yeah.
And it works.
And it increases horsepower?
Yes. Yep.
I had one 90 and a half Escort GT decades ago.
Yep.
And it had, I believe, a Mazda engine.
It was a Mazda partnered car. Yes, exactly.
And it had a four cylinder 16-valve engine,
yeah.
And that thing went like the dickens.
Those were very good cars.
Yeah.
My neighbor had one, and he put well over 200,000 miles
on this
thing.
This one did the same.
Yeah.
This was a stick shift,
yes.
And I think I replaced the clutch about 100 thou.
What color was it?
Like a teal green.
That's what color this one was.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'll be darned.
I think it was a distinct color for that package.
It was a very good
yes.
car. All right,
yeah.
let's get to the calls. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Paul in Albany is on. Paul.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a 2008 Passat Turbo 2-liter, and I had a timing chain replaced, and it was by a place that specializes in German autos. But when I got it back, the check engine light came on, and then they took it back, and they said something about a leak, one of those the air leaks, I guess.
Yeah.
And then anyway, I took it back to them. They fixed the gasket that the problem was supposedly, and it light come on again. You know, this is a real good place. I thought new German autos. Do you have any suggestions on that? That check engine light that came back on again after a couple of times too.
Yeah. The check engine light is real trouble for everybody.
Yeah.
Because there are so many reasons the light can come on, hundreds in some cars' cases. And in your case, it sounds to me like it is maybe an EVAP leak. Did that term come into the conversation, that you had an EVAP leak?
I don't think that was the term, but it may have been. I'm sorry.
Do you remember what the term was that was leading to the light coming on, or don't you remember?
No.
That's
okay.
Nah,
that's
all right. Sorry.
Well, the thing, we run into this all the time. The check engine light can come on at any time, no notice. Sometimes it's a bad problem. Sometimes it's very, very minor.
Vapor. I'm sorry, vapor leak.
Yeah,
vapor leak.
Yeah, so that's what's part of the EVAP system, and that's keeping the gas vapors contained inside the gas tank, and that code can cover anything from the gas cap to the engine and everything in between. So it's a very, very difficult to sometimes pinpoint.
Is it often a gas cap? Is it that simple?
That is a very good starting point, because if the gas cap leaks, it'll turn the light on for a EVAP leak, small or large. So it can be overlooked that it's the cap or the cap seal. But I'm sure these guys encounter this all the time. And like I said, the EVAPs are very difficult to nail down sometimes. And after a repair, the only true confirmation that it's fixed is to put the car back into service and hope the light doesn't come back on.
Right.
And that's the deal here.
All right. Well, Paul, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, the guest today on the program. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim.
It's something that happened that only could happen to me. I was trying to push a dent out of the bumper on a 2012 Challenger, and it's using a ball peen hammer covered with duct tape on the head. And I went back outside to try to check the progress, and I heard it drop. And I cannot find it. I looked for 3 days down inside there, and it's just plain disappeared. Oh, do you have any idea where it might be?
Oh, my gosh.
So where were you where were you pushing the dent out of? The bumper cover in the nose of the car? Or what area of the car were you trying to hammer out a dent?
Yeah, I was inside the hood trying to push it out from the inside there. It was on the passenger side. I had to use my left hand to try to use the implement of destruction and my right hand to try to feel where the dent was and try to match them up because I couldn't see it with
right.
my body over it.
So this is the hood you're trying to semi-straighten out?
It was under the hood.
Okay.
It was the front bumper, you know, just above that air dam.
Yeah. So what you'll probably have to do is get the car raised up.
Yeah.
If you can't see the hammer, it fell into a area that is probably encapsulated with plastic and shielding and stuff underneath the bumper cover. That a lot of cars have splash shields that go right under the engine, right under the transmission, and really almost seal up the underbody of the car. And I'll tell you, we drop things all the time while we're working on cars, and we have magnets of all lengths and sizes because it's very common. But sometimes the item you drop disappears, like in your case, and if you physically can't see or find it, some panels have to come out from the bottom to find the hammer. Now, if it's a hammer that's not of great value, I don't think it's going to harm anything, but I think that's the way you're going to have to find it.
Yeah, well, it's about 50 years old, so I hate to lose it. But,
yeah.
Right. I didn't hear any noise after that first bump there. That was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of stuff under hoods of cars in those crevices.
Yeah.
For real, there's wrenches, there's a change, there's everything under there.
I've lost a couple $1,000 under my hood many times before.
Where's the car? Let's go find it.
Well,
yeah.
I got to tell you, they usually end up in the junkyard. The number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Janice in, where are you calling from? Ethel?
Ethel, Massachusetts, yes.
It says Ethel. Oh, Ethel, gotcha. All right, you're on.
Yes, thank you, Gordon. Yes, I have a coolant issue. I believe it's with the heater core. I have a 2000 Chevy Cavalier with almost 200,000 miles on it. And late last winter, I noticed it was starting to use antifreeze, so I was putting new antifreeze in. I went through a couple gallons over the course of a couple months, and then I decided to put some stop leak in it. I used the quality liquid stop leak, and that worked. I didn't have the overheat issue. It was showing that it was overheating on the gauge, but when I checked under the hood, everything was fine. I find no noticeable leak or evaporation or anything. The only thing I have now is it runs fine as long as I have everything shut off. If I put the heater on, then it will go up into the overheat range, but under the hood it still seems fine. I'm not losing really any more antifreeze of any significant amount, and I was wondering if it would be worth it, because now it will go into the overheat range on the gauge, but inside the engine seems fine.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, it's probably obviously a heater core issue. Now, should I just have that blown out, maybe?
Well, if you're not losing coolant anymore, then your leak has been solved, at least for the time being. The heater
right.
core is just a little miniature radiator in the cabin that provides you heat.
Yes. Yes,
so,
I replaced it with my old truck before.
Yeah, they're not very fun to change in most cars. But if you, I think what needs to be confirmed is if your temperature gauge is true, telling you, saying that it really is that warm, then it definitely needs to be looked into. And sometimes just raising the hood and getting a sense of whether it's hot or not is not that accurate. If you had a scanning thermometer, you could shoot the engine with it and see what the actual temperature is around some components like the thermostat housing or the cylinder head. But I would confirm whether the gauge is telling you the true story that the engine's too hot. And if it is, see why. Does it only happen at slow speeds and idling, or will it happen when you're cruising?
No, the only time it does it is if I put the heater on. And then under the engine, everything seems fine. I mean, I can almost put my hand on it. I mean, the radiator seems fine.
Does your fan?
The water pump?
Do you still hear the? Do you still hear that electric fan working in front of the radiator?
Yes.
Yeah. I think I would get it checked, because you don't want to be distrustful of your gauges. Mm. Because if you really are on the brink of overheating and you say, the gauge is just telling me the wrong thing, then your engine is cooked and you're done, you know?
All right. Janice, we have to take a break. Thank you for calling. The number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. Gordon Fricke, our guest, the most popular man in the room. Wow, the lines are loaded right now. If you hear somebody hang up, that's the time to give us a call at 800-348-2551. Gordon, three emails, and then we'll go back to the phones and do as many as we can. This one came in from Ann. Ann writes, I have a 2008 Toyota RAV4, and my hum device emails a code of P0606. There are no warning lights on in the car, and it's running smoothly. Is this something that needs to be checked?
Well, it's nice to at least find out what the code is referring to. And I don't recognize that particular code, so it may not be a common one in terms of emissions. I think she could Google that code without getting involved with a manual or buying any materials. And I'm sure she can determine what the code means and get an idea what it is.
Having looked up many, many codes, if you put the make and model and the code, there is a group of people complaining about it.
Always.
Yeah.
You'll
find it.
Yep.
This one's from Paul in North Adams. Two quick questions. As the days get colder, should I add air to my tires? That's first.
Yeah. The answer is yes. People should have their tires checked regularly anyway.
Yeah.
Once a month. At least once an oil change, because they will lose air. It's a natural thing for the air to escape. So he's correct. The cooler it gets, the pressure is going to go down.
All right, second question, different car. 2006 Ford Explorer Eddie Bauer Edition has a transmission that sort of bumps as it shifts from first to second gear, generally after it warms up, more often in stop-and-go traffic. Any ideas?
Should check the transmission fluid level and condition. Mm-hmm. And on that vehicle, it has to be... There's no dipstick for the transmission, so it's got to be at a shop, on a lift, at operating temperature, and there's a special plug you remove to check its level.
What a jip.
Yes.
You can't check your own and do it that way?
Believe me, I hate the lack of dipsticks, because What easier thing can you do? Pull the stick. How does it look? Is it full? Am I in trouble? Can I add a quart?
Right.
Yeah.
This one's from Andrew in Canajoharie. I have a two-part question about the future of car repair labor. Do you believe there's going to be a shortage of mechanics in the workforce?
There is now.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Good money. Yeah. Good money to be made there. Learn a trade. Second question, how would you suggest making mechanical repair a career path for a young person who has minimal exposure to the trade?
Yeah. Well, if that person is a born tinkerer, likes to take things apart and things like that, then set your sights on a automotive program like here at Hudson Valley, or if you're near any community college, get involved in a BOCES program when you're in high school. And learn everything you can from the ground up.
These BOCES programs are incredible nowadays.
Yes, they
as
are.
Far as learning trades, whether it be cooking or whatever else. It's amazing.
We could spend the day talking about what's happening in the trades, but kids are not getting into trades. I don't care if it's plumbing, carpentry, auto repair, heating, and there's a massive demand for people who can fix things.
Full disclosure, my wife works for BOCES, so I just wanted to put that out there. But she always raves about all these programs.
It's a phenomenal program, and I hope it's full and kids are going through these programs.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and hit the button again. David and Saugerties. David.
Hello, Gordon.
Hi.
I have a 2016 Hyundai Tucson Turbo that I bought brand new in 2016, and it comes with a dual clutch transmission, which the Hyundai was very proud of.
Yeah,
I don't know why. When I read the forums, everyone complains about it. Coming from a dead stop, it will frequently hesitate and not give confidence when you're pulling out into traffic. Or in going in very, very slow bumper-to-bumper traffic, it will buckle just like a manual transmission if you're not quite off the clutch. And the dealership and corporate, I took it all the way up to corporate, claim there's nothing wrong with it. That's how it's designed. It works as it's designed, even though they don't admit that the design is flawed. I was wondering if you could shed any light on it.
Yeah, a lot of the newer automatics do operate differently from the old original automatic transmissions that started the whole thing off. The dual clutch models like yours, and then there are some Volkswagen has a ASG, which is a automatically shifting manual transmission that is in most of your over-the-road trucks and buses now. And they feel much different than a traditional automatic. So getting used to the way they operate is part of the program. And I'm sure that Hyundai is saying this is the way it is going to be operating. We can't change it. And I'm sure that's where they've left it with you. There are often some software changes and fixes to program the shift characteristics. And if that's available, you can call a dealer. Maybe they can tweak it and make it a little better. But I do believe it's probably the way it is.
They've done that.
Yeah.
And, to no success. And I think 2 years later, I think in the 2018, they did away with that transmission.
Yeah.
What I've been told.
That could be. And a lot of, I don't know about Hyundai, but a lot of the car makers are leaning towards CVTs, constant variable transmissions, and that has a whole nother operating characteristic that some people do not like.
What don't they like?
It's seamless, so there's no shifting felt anymore. You just step on the gas and it glides ahead and
goes.
What's
wrong with that?
Really nothing, and some people will hop in one and never even realize that it's not going through the upshifts and downshifts like what they're accustomed
to.
But
isn't that the goal? When you drive a stick shift and if you're good with a clutch and you're good with shifting, you don't know that you're doing it.
Yes, less of the stop and go herky jerky operation.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the call, David. By the way, why a dual clutch? Why?
It's how they shift from one gear to the next. It kind of gets the transmission in the ranges with, and dual clutch is nothing new. It's been around in automatics for years, but some of them feel stranger when they shift than others.
Mm. Why not three? Why not four?
Well, I don't think you need any more to get those gears changed.
Okay. And then what was this? You had mentioned they have a automatic controlled manual transmission. Isn't that just an automatic transmission?
It's an automatically shifting manual transmission.
Well, that's ridiculous.
And what are the letters? AS something or other. I don't know. But yeah, that's a there's gears in there.
Yeah.
And there's clutches in there and it does the shifting for you.
Like an automatic transmission.
But it's really not an automatic.
All right.
If you ever ridden in a newer bus,
no,
like a big touring bus, you think there's a guy shifting it doing a phenomenal job with a clutch.
Really?
And if you go up there and look, there's no clutch pedal.
What's the advantage of this?
I think it has a lot to do with not having an operator burn out clutches and ruin transmissions. I think the goal of the manufacturer is to make it less damage proof.
Okay. Let's go to Andy in Saratoga. Andy.
Hi, good afternoon. I had to call in because I have that same car you drove to work or to the show today.
Cool.
Gordon, an 87 16 valve. I had a 86 16 valve when it was brand new, and I own a bunch of old cars, and I happened to finally find one of these Sciroccos recently.
Nice.
And I bought it.
They are tough to find. They didn't make a lot of them, and people hung on to them, or they just went away, and
right.
You never see them again. So that's a cool car.
I wish I had hung on to mine, but this one is an 87. But what I'm calling in regard to, it's got a little bit of a knock in the steering column, and I haven't started messing around with it yet. You know, she's on the road, she drives, she's all legal and all that good stuff. But it's got a little, kind of a little bit of play, and it feels more like from the wheel down to the where the rack is, more or less.
Yep. So Go ahead. Now there is a universal joint that connects your steering shaft to the steering rack, and that universal mm-hmm. joint could very well have some play in it, and that will give you play in the wheel and a noise when you steer it or when you go through bumps. And I would I'd be very suspicious of that. How many miles around the car?
I'd have to turn it on and look, but I think it's around 170, 180. It's got some miles on it. It was driven. Somebody drove this car so much and polished it so much they wore off the paint when they were polishing it.
Well, at least they took care of it.
It's not bad. But so that knuckle, is it a bear to change that thing out or that U joint?
No, not too bad at all. Not by today's standards. Some vehicles today, you can't even see this thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, you'll be fine.
All right, Andy, thanks for the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. Doug in Grafton. Doug.
Gentlemen, I was wondering about getting rid of a truck that's outlived its usefulness. Rather than just parking it in the yard, what's the best way to get rid of it? Is there paperwork involved, and can I make any money on it?
Currently, salvage or scrap value is very low, but there are times when scrap goes up, there's a big demand for it, and a vehicle has some value in it. Is this a truck, did you say?
Yes, a 2001 GMC.
What is it, a 2500 or a 1500?
It's a 1500.
Yeah. There is definitely salvage value in that truck. There is value in the catalytic converters, and there's value in the actual weight for scrap. And you could, like I said, now's a bad time because scrap's low, but oftentimes in the spring it shoots up. Hmm. And guys will pick the vehicle up at your location and pay you some money. I don't know how much, but there was a time when you'd get $100 to $200 for the vehicle, and they pick it up at your spot.
All right.
So that's a possibility. You can donate it. WAMC does have a way to donate a vehicle.
Yeah.
And I don't know the ins and outs or the paperwork.
It's on the website.
Yeah. And I don't know what that if that provides you with any type of tax break. I mean, what's the value of it? Not much, but
I don't know. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. There are some ways to get rid of it and to make a little bit of money on the scrap itself.
All right, Doug, thank you very much. Gordon Fricke, our guest today, to Dominic in Glens Falls. Dominic.
Yes. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
The EVAP test, check engine light, 3 years ago, it took me 23 attempts to get my car inspected because of that.
Hmm.
And what we found out after a lot of, because we did new gas caps, everything, vacuum tests, and come to find out that my computer is doing the oxygen sensor test out of order. It does it before it does EVAP, and if it does, the check engine light comes on.
Hmm.
What sort of car
do you have? There is nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong with it. It just, it's, as soon as it does it out of order.
What's
the check engine light?
What's the vehicle, Dominic?
It's a 2007 Chrysler Sebring.
Okay.
So now the check engine light comes on, and I just wait a year until I have to inspect it. Then he clears it, drive about 150 miles, and then it will inspect.
Hmm. Huh. Yeah, I have had back in the day a Sebring or two that was nearly impossible to get that check engine light solved for. Pretty sure it was an EVAP code, to be honest with you. Yeah.
So I mean, can't you call the manufacturer and say, "Hey, can we get a software upgrade, please?"
That says it's a 2007. So.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not really going to put that much money into it. So.
Right. But Ray is correct. There are oftentimes software upgrades or reflashes that will solve a ton of issues like that. And some of them are not that expensive to accomplish.
It should be free. If your car keeps failing, if the check engine light comes on because of the computer sequence.
If it has been determined that it is a fault of the vehicle manufacturer, yes, they will do a recall. But it has to be a mandated recall.
Have you checked the recalls on that one, Dominic?
Yes, and there is none.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, well, good luck. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Andy in Springfield. Andy, you're on.
Hey, how you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2010 VW CC. I was the original owner. And last year, I started seeing all the lights go off in the dashboard, and it ended up being that I had a wiring harness that went through the strut on the driver's side of my trunk, and all the wires had frayed. So I had it replaced, but now I'm still having issues, with the camera going off and on, and it says one other thing keeps on flashing. Is there another wiring harness that I should be looking at?
I think the wires all go through one side of that hinge. But what are the items that are being affected? Is it everything? Is it stuff in the back of the car still?
No, everything seems to be working except for the backup camera. Sometimes it flicks on and sometimes it flicks off.
Yeah, so that's the only issue you're having at the moment?
It's the only issue I'm having. I mean, initially, when I had it replaced, I mean, I went down to a local guy who specializes in VWs, and, the wiring harness was $100, and he charged me $100 to put it in. And for a short while, everything seemed to work well, but about a year later, I'm having issues again with the backup camera, and it sort of looks like the same thing.
Right. Well, it could be the camera having problems all by itself. The wires could all be intact, and you just could be having a issue with the camera back there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a difficult thing to test, especially if it's intermittent, unless your shop has access to or has a camera from a used car or wreck car, something that wouldn't be difficult to swap and see if that proves it out. But that you
more
might,
likely it's a connector onto the camera.
It's possible, but too, that the car is old enough now that there may be a connection issue, a corrosion issue back there. But that's what I would be okay. zooming in on the camera itself, because if they replace the harness, you know, it's not likely that that's bad again, you know, in that short a period of time. But it would be worth looking at just to be sure it didn't get out of its holder and get frayed again.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, Andy, we have to take a break. Thank you for the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest today on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, the number. Home stretch straight ahead. Vox Pop, automotive maintenance repair and, you know, that sort of thing with Gordon Fricke today. And our number is 800-348-2551. The emails, two of them, and then phones, many of them. This one's from Kim. Kim writes, I have a 2003 Jeep Liberty Sport. At 40 miles an hour, it begins to vibrate. I can't figure where it's coming from. I had the air in my tires checked, my lug nuts checked, because it feels like a wheel might fall off, or maybe I'm driving on a flat. It's a standard. I'm not leaking fluids, shifting fine. The hard part is it is intermittent. Of course, I can't get it to do it when my mechanic is looking at it.
Of course, like the dentist, right? You know, my tooth's fine today.
Right.
So driveline is always a thing that's in question. Universal okay. joints, front drive shaft, because she said it was a Jeep Liberty. Anything that turns, rolls with any speed is in question. So yeah. wheels, tires, drive shafts, joints, that kind of thing is where I'd be looking.
All right. You still hearing music?
I am. Is that Al? Is that Al Hurt?
No, it's no. Peter Gunn, Henry Mancini. I have Zach leaving it on for our benefit. This one's from Laura. My manual shift 1999 Toyota Corolla apparently came with little or no fluid in the transmission, which I discovered 8 months later. Now I frequently check it, but after it had been filled, it was fine for 5 months. At 5 months, it needed a half a quart of gear oil. I was cautioned not to drive it very far, but have taken it almost 100 miles each way twice with no problem. Frequently go about 40 miles each way. It sometimes pops out of gear in first and reverse, but very infrequently. I wonder if you have any recommendations and if it is likely to dump me on one of my longer trips. I also, the engine light came on. A man at a parts store checked it, told me the obscure reason, and turned it off. About a month or two later, it passed inspection.
Wow. So the manual transmission oil
yeah.
is extremely important, and that car doesn't hold very much. So it's leaking somewhere.
Right.
And it will ruin the transmission.
Right.
And that will be pretty bad news for the life the rest of the life of that car, because it's going to be expensive.
And by the way, you should always, when your auto parts guy gives you the obscure code, you should write it down.
Yeah, it's a good idea to note the code.
Yes. Back to the phones. Charles in Coxsackie. Charles.
Hey there. I have a 2004 CRV, and the maintenance required light has been flashing when I start it up. It's got 93,000 miles on it. Any guesses?
So is this the, let's see, this is an 04. So this doesn't count your percentage of till oil change. Is that correct? This just says maintenance?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I actually just got the oil changed. I'm pretty regular about getting it done every 3,000 miles.
Yeah. That would still have to reset it though, right?
Yes. So the newer Hondas had a countdown percentage thing that, you know, you got your oil change, you reset it. It starts out at 100% oil life, and then it tapers down to... The dealer says get it in at 15%. To me, that's a little bit too long. But anyway, you can reset that yourself.
Ah.
And in your owner's manual, it'll tell you how to do it. But on that vintage CRV, if I remember correctly, you have the tripometer set to trip A, turn the key off, push the trip button, turn the key back on, and stay on the button until it flashes, I think, three times and goes out. And that resets that maintenance reminder.
Good Lord, how do you know that off the top of your head?
I just made the whole thing
up. Did you really?
No, I think that is the procedure. No, that's true. That's how you do
I'll
that
call
car.
Back and I'll let
yeah,
you know.
No, that'll do it.
Thanks, Charles. All right. Appreciate the call. And Dan in Castleton. Dan, you're on.
Okay. Hold on just a sec.
Fine.
Okay, I hear you fine now.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Ray and Gordon. Good show.
Thank you.
I have a 2009 Subaru Outback. It's been a good car, 96,000 miles. I'm getting this unusual click, click when I shift from, say, drive to reverse or vice versa, or when I use the sport shift. It's as though something were loose. I have a bad feeling that it relates either to transmission or gear. What do you think?
So where do you hear
to take?
Yeah, where do you hear the clicking from? Under the car, inside with you at the shift lever? Where do you hear the sound?
I would say it's outside of the car.
Front or rear? Can you tell?
Say again?
Can you think it's towards the front or towards the rear of the vehicle?
I can't define that.
Yeah.
It's sometimes tough.
It is. No, it's true. And sounds will shift around, or you'll think it's the right rear and it's actually the left rear. That
right.
Type. But so if you're getting a click when you engage a gear, that means your drivetrain is going from no load to load because it's getting ready to propel the vehicle. So
okay,
in a Subaru or any car today, I'd be definitely concerned with CV joints, CV drive axles. And what you're going to need to what you'll need to do is either have somebody outside of the car and you reproduce the sound or vice versa, or if you take it to a shop, be sure that you can demonstrate the sound to the mechanic so he knows what you're after. And it's probably going to be a driveline issue. It's probably a CV joint or drive axle issue. How many miles around the car?
96,000.
Yeah, it's too low usually for a drive shaft problem. But Subarus eventually will need a drive shaft because they're non-serviceable and the U-joints tend to wear out. But that's at pretty high mileage. So I think you're going to need to be able to reproduce the sound and then demonstrate it to somebody so they can pinpoint it.
All right, Dan, thank you for the call. Now to Richard in Hyde Park. Richard, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, Gordon and Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question ties into a bunch of questions that you've already answered, but I'm wondering if you've heard of or where you stand on the movement to right to repair, because, you know, in the early 70s, my dad taught me how to take care of cars, and I did my own maintenance, and then once the 80s came along and those transverse engines and I couldn't get to the rear spark plugs, you know, I needed special tools for that.
Right.
And now in the environment where we have tractors on production factories that can't be repaired, they have to go back to the factory. You know, and it gets back to your question on, you know, people, kids wanting to get into the repair maintenance. How do they still do that when, you know, there's so much specialization and computerization that they can't repair this stuff?
Right. Well, we've gone past that stage of technology where electronics and computers and modules are integrated in just about everything. So the pure mechanic that could figure out anything mechanical, take anything apart, put it back together, you still need those skills, but you have to be able to tie them into the electronics part of it. And for young people, you have to learn the electronics from electricity on up instead of jumping into it midstream or halfway through it where you don't understand what's happening and how it's being fixed. So as far as the right to repair laws go, that was just saying that the car makers couldn't force you to bring it only to their shops. Anybody could fix it with adequate spare parts and training and things like that. But yeah, it's gone to a super high tech world.
I understand that, and I abandoned the mechanics world to go into electronics. But I found that the same thing is like you're just swapping cards without trying to repair them. And the reason I called is because I'm listening to your show on the way back from an errand, and I've got a TPMS switch or a light on my Kia Sedona that's been on for a year after I had my favorite mechanic replace a valve that controlled the tire pressure monitoring system. And so that light was on. They replaced it. Now the Team PMS switch is on. And I went back to them and said, oh, we got to go to the dealer to get that reset.
Yeah.
And I've avoided that for the last year because I know how to monitor my own tire pressure.
Right, right.
Is that that's not a that can't so, be a, an inspection deal breaker, right?
It's not because I just got my inspection done a couple of days ago. But my question is like once you get into electronics and the software that drives that, that's intellectual property.
Right.
And that's where the companies are guarding that so you can't tamper with that. You can't even understand that.
I get you,
so
Richard.
How do you get around that?
Well, you know, I tell you what, this is a great question to bring up during our copyright forum and patents and whatnot, but we have so many people who have car issues. I'm going to have to let you go there, and we'll have to jump over to Deborah in Albany. Deborah, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks very much. Well, maybe the earlier caller who had a GMC answered this since he's dumping his, but I'm looking at a 2000 GMC Safari six-cylinder, and I was just wondering your opinion. I usually have Toyota, so it's 160,000 miles on one of those. I'm trying to decide whether to buy it. What do you think of those Safari
GMCs? The GMC Safari is not as long life and bulletproof maybe as some of the Toyotas that you're accustomed to, but they were a good vehicle and they did have the potential to last a long time, but it's a different category of vehicle. So it's a pretty relatively big van type vehicle, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So.
And it's pretty green. Gosh darn it, I'm buying it for the color. I know I should.
My advice on any vehicle, whether it be a Safari or a Toyota 4Runner, is at that age and mileage, you really should have it checked out.
Yeah.
Because
they won't let you do that. But
yeah.
I think that's old school, Gordon. I love you, but that's not happening anymore.
I know.
All right.
They just laugh at you and they say, bring your own mechanic. Well, you know, that's great. Who's got their own mechanic?
Well, you know, you can. There are car inspection companies that will travel and look at a vehicle for you for a fee. It's not that expensive. I've had people buy vehicles out of state, recommend this, and there's companies that you can get on the internet, and they will send a mechanic to a location and do a certain number of point check for you. And it's
you
a really good thing. They'll plug it in. They'll get a scan of the computer. They'll look at all your mechanicals.
That's great.
The seller will allow that, and if
they don't, then you don't buy.
Exactly.
Boy, my folks had a 67 Pontiac Safari wagon when I was a kid. Went into the early 70s. Those were the days.
Stacked headlights? One on top of the other?
Been so long.
Yeah,
now.
I know.
I think we got rid of it in 71, 72.
Pontiac had stacked lights for a while.
Yeah.
You know, the Bonnevilles, the GTOs, cool look.
Yep. Let's go to Jason in. Hello, Jason in Weldon. You're on.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm about to begin work on a friend's 2013 Dodge Challenger with the 5.7 Hemi engine in it.
Yep.
It's got a real loud, I know Hemi has a natural tick, but this is a really loud, more than a tick, I'm going to say probably a slap sound coming from the driver's side of the motor.
Yep.
And I was just wondering, you know, what could it be? Could it be something along, you know, the hydraulic lifters, the, the push rods, the rocker arms?
How many miles are on it, roughly?
About 130.
Be suspicious.
130.
Yeah, be suspicious of leaking exhaust manifold gaskets. They'll give you a ticking sound that mimics a valve lifter. And if you blurp the throttle, it'll really make that sound louder. I would be concerned with the potential of an exhaust manifold gasket leak, but valve lifters on that car are no picnic. I believe, and I'm not sure if that Hemi has them, but they do have a system where the valves will shut down for fuel economy, and it's a real, real lot of stuff in there, a lot of solenoids and a lot of lifters. It's a major, major job.
Is blurp a verb?
I don't know. I think so.
That's a good word, blurp.
So I actually own a 2005 Dodge Magnum with the 5.7 Hemi, and I just did a full rebuild on my motor. My motor only has 5,000 miles on it. And I know it has the MDS system where it shuts down some of the pistons in order to save gas.
Yep.
I've done the rebuild on this exact motor before because I do own one, and I don't believe it's going to be that difficult, but the person I'm doing it for, my friend, really is just looking for more of a direction to point, whether if it's going to be something up top, in the head, or if the head has to come off, and that's where it's going to get a little more expensive.
Right. Without hearing it, I couldn't give you an opinion because some sounds are different to other people's ears if it's a valve lifter issue, I would be careful because you got a lot of stuff under there with those valve solenoids that shut those cylinders down. There's a lot of stuff going on in there.
Jason, thank you very much for the call. Quickly over to Bob on the Mass Pike. Bob, you're on.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I've got a 2008 535 all-wheel drive BMW with a twin turbo on it.
Yep.
And it's got 150,000 miles on it. It drives great. I do a lot of highway driving. I don't really drive it that hard. But if I do kick it real hard in traffic or pulling out, I get a warning light, engine malfunction light, says reduced power. Is that my turbo going, or am I just hitting it too hard?
What you should do is it leaving the check engine light on ever?
No.
No. I would get it scanned with European software. So you're not just scanning OBD2, you're actually going into the BMW module. And if you're getting a reduced power message, and if that happened relatively frequently or not too long ago, there should be some messages or codes as to the possible source of the problem. Could it be a turbo issue? It could be, but that's a very tough thing to guess at and very expensive. But right. I would start by getting it scanned and just see where that goes. See what kind of codes you get.
All right, I'll do that. Can I ask you one other question about it?
Sure.
It's doing this weird thing lately where I'm actually losing time on my clock from one day to the next, like 8 or 10 minutes each day. Does that make any sense at all?
But everything else, it starts fine every day. You're not having slow cranking or a weak battery feeling.
I do get some slow battery, weak cranky feeling. So I got to make sure I lock it, make sure that everything's off when I get out of it.
Have you ever had to jump start the car?
Is the battery getting old? Yes.
Yeah. Probably have a battery going for sure. Because those cars draw some current at rest, key off. And it's probably dragging that thing down every single night a little bit.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. And that is where we will have to leave it. Gordon Fricke, splendid job, sir.
Thank you very much.
Now you're going to get back in the Scirocco and head back.
I'm going to try all 16 valves.
Okay. How fast do you have to go to get all 16 valves working?
125 miles an hour.
Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah, right, I'll let you know.
Let's alert the state police now. Thank you, Gordon Fricke. Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, providing the greater capital region with custom display cases, trade show exhibit fabrication, interactive kiosks for nationwide conferences, special events, and museum exhibitions, empireexhibits.com. Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley and Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more, bergeronelectric.net. And Adirondack Experience, celebrating fall with Fall Fest, Sunday, September 29th, featuring apple pressing, autumn crafts, and square dancing, adkx.org for details. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Susie Chekai, our producer, the affable Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Pets and Vets. Dr. Ron Scharf will be here. If you have a pet or a vet, you give us a call at 2. Stand by now for the book show.